I'm John Geraint, John on the Rhondda, with the last of our exclusive extracts from The Great Welsh Anti-Novel. The Great Welsh Anti-Novel by me, John Geraint, is published by Cambria Books, C-A-M-B-R-I-A. It's available from cambriabooks.co.uk, and of course from all good bookshops. It's election night, February 1974. 17-year-old Jack is trying to get a fix on why he feels stuck in a pattern of life dictated by his sheltered Rhondda childhood. As an only child, Jack had little idea how to negotiate with other children. On the rare occasions he didn't get his own way at home, he had a tactic. Not so much a tactic because he didn't feel in control of it. In fact, he felt overwhelmed by it, overwhelmed with anger and sadness, directed at himself as much as anyone. He would pout. Sulking was a recognised ploy. His grandparents had a special Welsh word for it, poodie. Cutting off his nose to spite his face was what his father called it. He disapproved mightily. Though with the rest of the family, and Mam in particular, it worked. But if he poodied with a playmate, they'd simply pick up their ball, literally or metaphorically, and head home to their brothers and sisters. Jack would be left alone, bereft, with nothing to do but go on pouting. In a group, pouting was even more disastrous. He would be taunted and teased mercilessly, and his attachment to telling the truth made it worse. In Sunday school, he'd been taught that God demands honesty from his children. It was a standard Jack's father adhered to at all times. The truth shall make you free. But the truth could trap you too. One Friday evening, a gang of them had been up the Tumps, a patch of rough, grassy knolls at the end of Hughes Street. It looked down on the incline, the derelict tramway that, when the naval colliery had been working, took the spoil from underground to be dumped as a massive pyramid, the Black Tip, which still loomed over Mid Rhondda from the mountain above. They'd been talking about toys. Heading home, Belinda Owen made them all promise to bring their favourite toy out to play, first thing next day. The boys planned to bring Daleks, robots, binoculars. The girls, roller skates, skipping elastics, Chatty Cathy. James Taylor had a tank that fired real shells. Belinda, tough as any boy, would turn up with her action man. She asked Jack what he'd bring. It was several months since he'd got his steering wheel back. No one there knew about it. He could have impressed them all by naming his corgi, gold-coloured James Bond Aston Martin, complete with working ejector seat. But he couldn't tell a lie. His favourite was the toy he'd told them he'd grown out of. They scoffed when he confessed he'd got it back. And worse, much worse, when they met at the Tumps next morning, his steering wheel was the only toy in sight. But everyone had promised. As Jack began to remonstrate, James Taylor snatched the steering wheel from his grasp and wouldn't give it back. Not until Jack paid a forfeit. Belinda said he had to name 10 pop groups. Why she picked on that, goodness knows. Go on, Jack, just name 10. Name 5, then you can have your precious toy back, jeered James. Why would I want to keep it? Let him name 3, someone suggested. Everybody knows 3 pop groups. They were right. It was the 1960s after all. But pop music didn't feature in Jack's house. There was no record player, no transistors. They didn't even have one of those rediffusion boxes that piped in a couple of radio stations, together with a relay of TV signals that you couldn't pick up otherwise because of the mountains. They're wireless. Was tuned to the home service. Hymns were the only music Jack was familiar with. He wasn't even sure what counted as pop music. He tried to brazen it out. "Just three? That's papish," he said. "Come on then, Jack, name three," mocked Belinda. "Everyone in the world can name three. Ina Sharples could name three." Who was Ina Sharples? She must go to another school. "My goldfish could name three." Perhaps Ina Sharples was Belinda's goldfish. But there was no way out now. He had to begin. The Beatles. A good start, but that was all. Nothing else came. The laughter began. "We give you a clue, Jack. We give you more than a clue. We'll give you one for free. The Dave Clark Five." Was that a trick? A way of making him look even more stupid? Was Dave Clark a friend of Ina Sharples? "Glad all over, Jack." But Jack wasn't. No bit of him was glad. In fact, he was nearly crying. He gave up and told James Taylor as forcefully as he dared to give the steering wheel back anyway. It was his property. Taylor poked his tongue out, said the wheel was now forfeit, and threw it to Belinda. When Jack approached her, she tossed it back to Taylor. Jack became piggy in the middle, trying, failing, to catch his beloved toy as it whizzed past him from one tormentor to the other. "I'm fed up with this now," he warned them, red-faced. Nonchalantly, Belinda yawned to let him know that she'd had enough too. Then she simply turned and hurled the toy away with all her strength, which was considerable, and the wheel was surprisingly aerodynamic. It soared across the tumps, a sky blue whir, up and over the edge of the banking, hovering there before plunging way, way down towards the rusted metal cables of the incline, disappearing as it landed short of the tramway in the middle of the biggest patch of stingies in the whole of Mid Rhondda. Jack spent the next half hour in there, fruitlessly searching. The others catcalled down as he stumbled blindly about. By the time he pulled himself out, empty-handed, the red nettle rash hot on his skin had covered every inch of his legs below his shorts and both his forearms up to the sleeves of his t-shirt. Feeling more than sorry for himself, he tried to reason Belinda into an apology. Without hesitation or warning, she walked straight up to him and punched him right in the guts. He doubled up in agony and staggered home. That night, under his blankets, after Mam had dabbed calamine lotion over the stings for a second time, Jack played out the scene in his head yet again, tears pricking his eyes once more. If only they'd asked him something else, some other catalogue of names, it would have been papish. No bother at all. Chapels, perhaps. Or better, streets. Even in his distress, he realised it would be shameful to betray that he knew the names of 10 chapels. Streets would have been all right. He could have done 20. Tillicalin, Hugh Street, Hill Street, Nant Gwyn, Hendricavan, Penmice Glass. Those he knew well enough. Beyond that, what? Greenfield Street and Field Street? Or were they one and the same, like you could shorten Tonopandy Square to Pandy Square, though it was just the one place? You might get tripped up on that. Was there a Balaclava Row up towards Craigareos? There couldn't be. Who'd name a street after a hat? Gilvach Road, that was easy. You could have it twice, an allowable doubler, one in Penygraig, one in Tonopandy, both heading directly up the mountain towards Gilvach. Not that any bus could drive up them to get there. Llwynypia Road, on the other hand, certainly led to Llwynypia. But Trialo Road was already in Trialo, surely. It was all so confusing. Where was the Pimmer? Was it a street? How did you even spell it? Small as he was, Jack understood something there in bed. Why he'd embarked on this listing of streets. His skin was itchy and sore. He'd been humiliated by his ignorance of modern music. He'd lost a fight to a girl, something no boy he knew had ever, ever done. Worst of all, his precious steering wheel was gone forever. But he was distracting himself. And then he realised that that's what he was doing. And the pain came back. "I could do with some help here," Jack found himself admitting finally. "I could really do with some help. And perhaps there is a God, after all. Perhaps he does answer prayer. Or maybe it's just that a seemingly cold, uncaring universe looks after its children in some beneficent way we're not equipped to understand. Or it could have been mere coincidence." Whatever the explanation, and although it didn't happen straight away, Jack came in retrospect to credit his desperate plea that dark night for the fact that eventually, in a way that nobody could have anticipated and few would believe, someone did come to help him. That was the last of our exclusive extracts from The Great Welsh Anti-Novel by me, John Geraint, published by Cambria Books, C-A-M-B-R-I-A. If you'd like to find out what happens to Jack and his friends, and who it is that comes to his rescue, the clue's in the title. The Great Welsh Anti-Novel is available from cambriabooks.co.uk, and of course from all good bookshops. Join me for another trip down Memory Terrace next time in John on the Rhondda.